The Dodgers and Cubs are making some interesting choices of who to take with them to Japan. Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Wednesday, March 12th. This is your source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. Follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Troy Brock, Troy B Baseball on the Twitter machine. We're going to get to our projected third place team in the East. No spoilers, but it's the Mets. We're going to get to Brian Cashman's thoughts on getting new pitching for the team. We're going to get to the Baltimore Orioles and these weird new uniforms that they've introduced for this season. And maybe we'll finally get to that top 10 lineups piece. But first, the Dodgers and Cubs have to leave earlier than everybody else, or start the season earlier, because they're playing in Japan. So they're going to leave early next week to head to Japan. They'll play two exhibition games and then their two matchups next week. And they've both made some interesting moves for what that roster is going to be. We'll start with the Dodgers, because the Dodgers optioned Hyesung Kim, the Korean free agent they signed over the offseason to play second base. They've optioned him to the minors. So with Kim now not part of that roster, how do you set up your infield if you're the Dodgers? Because you have Mookie Betts, you said you want to play shortstop. Tommy Edmonds expected to be your center fielder. So who plays second base?
Right, yeah. I mean, they really don't have that many options who are both good defensively, who are either good defensively and good offensively, or one of either. It's just that's kind of the one weakness of this team is a lot of their infield defense outside of really Freddie Freeman, specifically because Mookie Betts insists that he wants to be a shortstop and he's really not cut out for it, especially at his age. And it's crazy. I mean, maybe Kike, maybe Chris Taylor. I don't know. There's not a good answer.
Kike feels like he's better in the postseason than he is in the regular season. It's just one of those things. Like, he gets better then, but he's not that great, I feel like, in the regular season. I'm not sure what he did last year as far as stats. I want to say his WRC plus was like in the 80s. I mean, he's not an everyday starter. Honestly, the way it feels like they need to do this from the most optimal offensive and defensive perspective is to do something like Edmund at short, Mookie at second, and then you put James Outman's a better defender, Andy Pajes is a better offensive player, put one of them in center field. And then if you need to do defensive swaps later, you need to cover up for Teoscar or Michael Conforto, you can move whatever those center fielders, like you can move Pajes to a corner and put Edmund into center to end the game, and you can let Miguel Rojas come in and play defense for an inning or two at short. That feels like the best way to set up the roster. But we all know they're not going to do that because Mookie wants to play short. So it's odd. Like, you really needed, after trading Gavin Lux, you really needed Hyesung Kim to do the dang thing. And so far, yeah, no.
Yeah, no, it hasn't worked out. It's been one of their few signings that have not worked out over the past few years. And it is still early. He can still turn things around. But to this point, which has just been strictly spring training, it has not worked out. Nobody really expected him to be a star offensively. He was brought in to be the defensive option for second base. And apparently even that is out of the cards for him at this juncture.
Yeah, I mean, I completely understand the idea of, like, letting a guy acclimate to the majors or acclimate to the States in the minors. It makes sense. It's just felt like they put a lot of eggs in that basket when they traded Lux away, and then him not being ready makes it tough. Speaking of, like, ready or not ready, FanGraphs has Roky Sasaki as the number two in this rotation behind Yamamoto and ahead of Blake Snell and Tyler Glasnow. And I'm like, what are we doing? It's probably some combination of, like, Snell, Glasnow, and Yamamoto 1 through 3. I don't care what order you put them in, whatever. If you put them off career accolades, it's Snell 1, but some order of like that, and then Sasaki like 4th. But they have Sasaki as the number 2 with Yamamoto 1, Snell 3, Glasnow 4. And what can you imagine a world where Tyler Glasnow is your 4th best starter on opening day? My yeah. God, absurd.
That is crazy. I will say, normally I'm not one to jump to FanGraphs defense, but I will say that they probably only have it like that because that's how it's going to work out in Japan.
That's a good point. I think they've already said the two starters are Yamamoto and Sasaki. Okay, that makes sense. That would be why they would do that. Okay, thank you for clarifying that, because I'm like, that's weird. That's totally weird.
No, I did. Whenever you first said that, I was like, wow, that is weird. But then I remembered there's pitching that way in Japan. But yeah, if that wasn't the case, then I'd be right there with you, because I already think FanGraphs, a lot of the stuff that they do with their projection system is wild. But yeah, this one does make sense.
Okay. Flip it over to the Cubs side of this. They have indicated, it's not official, but they have indicated that they'll be taking top prospect Matt Shaw with them to Japan. And he's going to open as the starting third baseman. This is something where Nico Horner is still recovering from the flexor tendon surgery. So utility man John Birdie, former Marlin, former Yankee, he'll start at second base. And then Matt Shaw is going to be the guy at third. First round pick in 2023 to be up this soon. Is this a scenario where this is almost all upside for the Cubs, or do they really need this to work out, because they probably only have 1 year of Kyle Tucker and they don't really have a lot of other great options to play third base, because Justin Turner at age 40 is not an everyday third baseman and John Birdie's kind of a fill in at best. Who's needed at second right now? Like, is this a like smart idea, or is this like a risk? Because if this doesn't work out, they could get into a hole early in their only year of having Kyle Tucker.
Yeah, they definitely need this to work out. They are going all in for 2025 and bringing up their top prospect. It seems to be part of it, even though it's more of a necessity because of the injury than their original plan. But they definitely need it to work out, because they don't have another option for third base, especially with Horner injured. Their options are limited, and Matt Shaw was to be that guy in the future, and the future got here a lot sooner than they expected. It's going to be exciting to get to see Matt Shaw play at the major league level and see what he's capable of doing so early in his professional career. And hopefully it works out for him, because, you know, we've talked about it already, but I'm high on the Cubs this year and they're going all in, and it's going to be an exciting time in Chicago.
Yeah, they have veteran defender Nicky Lopez in camp as an NRI. And I think I saw a report the other day that he's going to opt out, because I think they've indicated that he's not going to make the opening day roster. They're going to stick with Shaw. And part of me almost wonders, do you put Nicky on the roster so you can keep him? Because a lot of those XXB free agents, you finished last year on a major league roster, but you're on a minor league deal now. You can opt out 5 days before the season starts if you're not going to make the opening day roster. It almost feels like you can take extra players with you to Japan. Maybe you put Lopez on the roster and you take Shaw with you. But either way, it's just this has to work out for them. I mean, this is a scenario, kind of like you said, there's no real other great options. Once Nico Horner's back, and I think he's throwing right now, but once Nico's back, you have the option, yeah, to put Birdie at third if you need to. You've got some utility stuff. Justin Turner can give you an inning or two whenever you need it, but you've got Vidal Bruján as a utility guy who can play anywhere, but he's not great at anything. You need this to work out. You really do. Another team that kind of needs some stuff to work out of the New York Yankees. He talked to the media on Tuesday and said that they're not going to have much luck adding pitching right now. Quote, we'll just evaluate what's available. And this time of year, very little is available. Normally, the more significant opportunities don't exist until the trade deadline. Going outside the organization is just that much more difficult to do. So we'll rely on what we have and we'll explore what is limited available in the marketplace. Those are his words, not mine. But if they can't find a starter somewhere, are they in trouble? Like, you're going to have to go out and sign some veteran retread free agents. Is this like Lance Lynn, New York Yankee? Does this just scream Lance Lynn, New York Yankee to you?
Yeah, it's certainly seems like it's not going to be an ace filling coming back through a trade. It's going to be somewhere more along the lines of Lance Lynn
becoming
just an innings eater to get through the season, because what it sounds like to me from his quote is they reached out to other teams and either A, the ask was way too high, or B, the teams they reached out to think they have a chance of contending and they're not
in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Almost everybody does.
Yeah. And they need to reach out to the Marlins because there's no way they're making the playoffs, but it's but that ask is going to be exorbitantly high.
Sandy's going to be super expensive. Plus Miami just kind of has a history with the Yankees anyway, of like the Yankees ended up regretting those deals. They got Giancarlo Stanton. The Yankee, by the way, if you don't know this, people, the Miami Marlins have a charge on their CBT every year of $3 million to cover that a portion of Giancarlo Stanton's salary. They're paying $3 million this year for Giancarlo Stanton. They're paying $3 million next year for Giancarlo Stanton. They're paying $3 million in 2027 for Giancarlo Stanton. He is the fourth most expensive player on the Miami Marlins this year. Sandy's making 17.3. Cal Quantrill is making 3.5. Jesus Sanchez is making 4.5 in his first year of arbitration. And then number four is Giancarlo Stanton. Okay, technically not, because they cut Abisail Garcia last year. They owe him like $12 million. I'm sorry, I forgot that. So it's the fifth most expensive player, but numbers four and five aren't even on the Marlins.
Yeah, it's crazy. But the Miami is an enigma. There's no other way. They're right up there with the Angels and the Rockies for some of the most poorly run franchises in the sport. And
and yet they've won two World Series.
Yeah. Yeah.
They build a team, they win a World Series, they sell everything that's not bolted down, and they end up, in some of these cases, paying for it for a decade afterwards.
Yep, and this one's been 2 decades afterwards so far.
his knees are 20 years older than the rest of him. Okay, back in 1971 and 1972, one, Giancarlo Stanton was probably born. Or his knees, at least.
I'm a hater, man. I don't think you want to ask me that. I am a hater, so I'm going to just leave it at that.
But also, the Baltimore Orioles wore an all-orange uniform. They brought it back in 2010 as a throwback one time. They announced this week that they've added an all-orange uniform combination. They've had orange jerseys. They've worn them since 2012. But you can now pair them with orange pants. And so it's going to be it's going to be black. I think it's like a hat with a black front panel and then orange tops and orange pants. The look debuts on April 12th. They'll be hosting the Blue Jays. And for those of you on YouTube, we have a video. We have a picture of what this looks like. Tell me that's not a prison jumpsuit. This is 100% a prison. Charlie Morton is over here wearing a prison jumpsuit. Jackson Holliday is over here wearing a prison jumpsuit, and they're going to play baseball in prison jumpsuits. It's like, what are we doing, man?
Yeah, it's not great. It's not flattering in the slightest. I mean, even if you look at that picture, Charlie Morton, he kind of looks like he's in prison in that uniform. Like he looks like he's mad, he's about to shake somebody.
Look like they're in prison. And here's the thing. It's not even the same as the 1971 uniform. Like, it is also all orange like those were, but it's not even the same as that one. That one had like these cool like stripes on the sleeve and stuff. It's just sometimes you don't have to do some of this stuff sometimes. This is an unforced error, I feel like. Now, will I feel different when they're on the field? Maybe. But these just look odd to me, right?
Yeah, they're not great. Now, do you think this could be a situation where, like those jerseys from the early 2000s with the vests and the cutoff sleeves, do you think, because people love those now for some reason, do you think in 20 years people are going to want the prison jumpsuits back for the Orioles?
Oh, man. You know what? I've heard that wearing jumpsuits is actually, like, super comfortable, like, around your house.
Hey,
It's like people who wear like it's like jumpsuits and scrubs. Like people think you're just super comfortable to wear on the house. So I'm kind of tempted to like, I don't know, check it out and see how it goes.
Moo-moos are fun. I'll wear a moo-moo.
There you go. All right. Top 10 MLB lineups for 2025. This was an article from MLB.com. Anthony Castrovince. Can we make fun of this real quick? Because it's pretty bad. Okay, cool. Some of these make sense. Like the Dodgers at number one. Okay, yeah, you get Ohtani, Betts, and Freeman in some order. Teoscar Hernandez behind it. Yeah, it's easy to go ahead and be like, that's a good lineup. I mean, that's easy. Number two is the New York Mets. And when you read the article, he said that he legitimately wrestled with Dodgers or Mets for number one. In what world is the New York Mets lineup? And he gave a suggestion here. Lindor, Soto, Alonso, Nimmo, Vientos, Winker, Alvarez, McNeil, Siri. In what world is that lineup equivalent to the Los Angeles Dodgers throwing out three MVPs to start?
Yeah, it's maybe Mars, Jupiter, whatever planet Anthony's on, because it's a drastic drop off after you pass Juan Soto. Like everybody knows our feelings of Pete Alonso, and I'm sure we'll talk about him later in the show as well. But Brandon Nimmo's still not 100%.
Wait. Happened. What's your feelings about Pete Alonso?
I'm a hater, man. I don't think you want to ask me that. I am a hater, so I'm going to just leave it at that.
I will say Juan Soto is really, really good. And there's a very easy explanation for why he's so good.
Why do you like him?
Because he gets on base.
I forgot I had that in here still.
Videos today.
But yeah, like Jesse Winker at six. In what world is, like, if you compare position to position, like Lindor versus Betts is close. Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got Alonso versus Freeman. I'd take Freeman every day.
Yeah.
Winker versus Ohtani.
Ohtani.
Francisco Alvarez won't even be in that lineup on opening day. He's out for a while with that broken hammock bone. Soto is better than Teoscar Hernandez. Yes. Okay. You got that. But like Brandon Nimmo, Michael Conforto. At best, that's a wash, and I kind of trust Conforto more than Nimmo there. Mark Vientos, Max Muncy, they're the same person. They're the same player. Jeff McNeil versus whoever plays second base for LA.
Yeah.
Similar boat. Jose Siri versus Andy Pajes. Well, Siri strikes out more than anybody in baseball. So, like, it's wild to me. I think, well, we had one of those that was a clear winner for the Mets. Have to pander and say that they're one and two and you're struggling with this is stupid.
Yeah, 100%. The Mets have a lot of hype because they spent over $1 billion in the offseason and they signed Juan Soto, who is the best all-around hitter in the sport. And other than that, they're not great. Their rotation is not I'll save it for later. But yeah, it's just considering them right next to the Dodgers as far as lineup is just it's asinine. It's ignorant. There's no nicer way to put it. It's just completely ignorant.
Yeah. Number three was the Atlanta Braves. I think I'd put Braves too, honestly.
Yeah.
I real quick, but like I think the real reason the Mets are over the Braves in this and the Mets are number two is the distance from MLB's offices to Citi Field is 12 miles. It's 12.3 miles, which at time of recording is a 43-minute drive via the FDR. It's faster, by the way, if you take the subway. It's only 34 minutes. It's the 7 train. You switch lines to the F, and then you walk the last little bit.
We are helping everybody on this geography, man. If you didn't know where an MRI machine was in Florida, now you do.
This is apparently just my new bit now. Okay. The Braves at three. Okay, you'll get Ronald Acuña Jr. back. You'll get Sean Murphy back. They don't have them right now. If you're batting Ozzie Albies seventh, like, that's a good lineup. If you're batting Ozzie Albies seventh.
Yeah, that's a solid lineup. The Braves have I mean, you could argue the Braves and the Dodgers as for number one.
You could debate
one,
them back and forth.
And I would not be opposed to that as somebody who loves the Phillies. I would not be opposed to arguing the Braves with the Dodgers for number one. That would make a lot more sense.
Speaking of that, your Phillies are in fourth. Yeah, Trey Turner at short, Harper, Bohm, Schwarber, which was his lineup here. Never mind the fact that Schwarber leads off. Castellanos, Stott, Realmuto, Kepler, and Marsh. Like, Schwarber would be first.
Mm-hmm.
Turner second. I guess Harper third. I don't know.
Yeah, Bohm that's third, how it was Harper last year.
I don't know. Yeah, there you go. But yeah, like, having them, and to me, I'd have them above the Mets too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's not even close. Again, when you put them side by side, I mean, Francisco Lindor is the better shortstop than Trey Turner. Bryce Harper.
Both defensively and offensively.
Right.
You're a better defensive shortstop than Trey Turner.
Yes.
Mookie Betts is better defensive shortstop than Trey Turner.
Bryce Harper is far and away the better first baseman than Pete Alonso. Yep. Like, Alec Bohm and Mark Vientos, they're not far off. Probably give the nod to Vientos because he's a little more, a little more consistent.
A little more power production there for Vientos. More home he runs. Has less of a track record, but more power production.
Kyle Schwarber is better than Jesse Winker. Juan Soto gets the nod over Nick Castellanos.
Unless some sort of disaster is happening.
Well, yeah.
And then Kepler, right. God.
Yeah. But Bryson Stott, I'd take Bryson Stott over the Mets third baseman or second baseman. I'd take JT Realmuto over Francisco Alvarez. It's just the Phillies have the better lineup than the Mets.
That's probably a wash. Marsh over Siri. Probably Marsh because he can actually make contact from time to time, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Red Sox at five. Okay. Sure. Whatever.
If they stay healthy.
If they stay healthy. Yeah, that's fine. I think we're assuming health for all of this. Orioles at six. Okay, sure, whatever. Yankees at seven. What?
What? How far away is their ballpark from the MLB.com office?
It has to be pretty close. Honestly, Yankees at seven. This is Aaron Judge, Jazz Chisholm, and the boys. That's what this lineup is.
And you're higher on Jazz Chisholm than I am. I would just say Aaron Judge and the boys.
Yeah, like putting. Like, I just if they bat Chisholm leadoff, I swear I'll be so happy because the dude is a leadoff hitter, and he's talked about he plays differently. Back when he used to cover the Marlins, he plays differently at leadoff, and he's so much better. I think at leadoff.
Yeah, no, like, I agree with that.
Giancarlo Stanton's probably not even going to be in there, right?
At all.
Paul Goldschmidt is, 43 years old. Jason Dominguez is trying to figure out how to, play left field for the first time.
He'll be optioned before the season starts.
Ooh, hot take. Anthony Volpe went from leading off last year to batting eighth in this. You have Oswaldo Cabrera at third. Come on. Diamondbacks at eight.
That's too low, yeah.
I understand that they lost Jock Peterson and they lost Christian Walker from last year. They were one of the better run scoring offenses in baseball last year. Walker to Naylor is a small downgrade.
Yeah.
I think you will be surprised how small of a downgrade Jock Peterson to Pavin Smith ends up being.
Yep.
Especially when they platoon him like they platooned Peterson. Okay.
Yep.
This is a very Eugenio Suarez can pop off for 30 home runs at third base. Lourdes Gurriel is one of the better offensive left fielders in baseball. Ketel Marte was an MVP candidate for a while last year. Corbin Carroll, when he got healthy again, is one of the most dynamic players in baseball. Eight is too low for the. I could put them in my top five.
Yeah,
I could 100%. Put them ahead of the entire AL East in this.
Yeah, I would also 100%. That lineup is strong.
Padres at nine. They have that same fall off issue that a lot of these other ones do, right?
Yeah.
Arise at first. We are on the record about Luis Arise. We're haters. That's fine. I'm not playing the video again. We're haters, guys. Tatis at two. Not the same player since he came back from that suspension. Manny Machado, Jackson Merrill. Jackson Merrill cleaning up? What are we doing? Put him at three. Let Machado bat clean up. Xander Bogaerts at five, who's going to be stretched back to shortstop again. Cronenworth, Jose Iglesias playing second base at seven. Let's hope he can produce like last year. Jason Hayward at eight. Elias Diaz behind the plate at nine. This is like, they're not a top 10 offense. I'm sorry. They have potential to be a top 10 offense, but they're not a top 10 offense.
Yeah, no. I mean, yeah, maybe top 15, but definitely not top 10.
Yeah. The Rangers at 10. I could buy this argument, okay? Marcus Semien, Corey Seager, Wyatt Langford, Adolis Garcia, Jock Peterson, Josh Young, Jake Berger, Jonah Heim, Evan Carter. I can buy them at 10.
Yeah, yeah. I would put them ahead of the Padres and the Yankees and maybe even the Red Sox because their health questions are very prominent. But yeah, top 10 for the Rangers is a good spot.
And clubhouse chemistry questions for the Red Sox too.
Yeah.
All right. The teams that he commented about leaving out of here, the Astros, the A's, the Blue Jays, the Cubs, the Royals, the Twins. Who is the most egregious omission? Oh, and the Reds. Who is the most egregious omission out of this?
Yeah, that one's... I would probably say with what the A's have done, maybe the A's with the improvements they've made with Brent Rooker and Lawrence Butler popping off.
I think some of that is we don't know what the Sacramento ballpark's going to do. Yep. But yeah, like the A's, they were red hot in the second half. And I mean, I could see them for a while, if health works out, threatening for the postseason. So like, I don't think they're going to make it, but I think they could be in the race in at the All-Star break still. They wouldn't be eliminated yet. So definitely big there. Okay. We got just a few minutes here left. Our division previews, New York Mets. We're haters on the Mets. The lineup, I think, is fine. You're banking on a lot of over 30-year-old guys to get back to health and to rediscover form. And unfortunately, Brandon Nimmo, still not healthy. Jeff McNeil, still not healthy. Now you've lost Francisco Alvarez for a while to a broken hammock bone. Even when he comes back, he's going to struggle with power because he broke his hammock bone, right? Obviously, Juan Soto is generationally good. No issues there. But like, do we think that they can catch magic in a bottle again? Right? The combination of Starling Marte and Jesse Winker at DH. They're platooning at DH. I mean, why is everybody so high on this Mets lineup? Is it just what they did last year plus adding Soto?
Yeah, it's recency bias. They had a magical run last year, and they had a improbable run in the postseason, which making it farther than they ever had any reason to do. And plus, they added Juan Soto, who again is the best all around hitter in the sport. And it's really outside of that. And they spend a lot of money, and so they're in the press a lot because they're in New York. So people hear about them a lot. There's really nothing to be excited about. It's Francisco Lindor, Juan Soto, and the boys in this lineup. I mean, it's not the worst lineup in Major League Baseball. I would put the Mets lineup over the Yankees lineup any day of the week, but it's still Francisco Lindor, Juan Soto, and the boys.
They have some interesting prospects, right? They have Ronald Acuña's little brother. They've got Jet Williams. Ronnie Mauricio could be a third base, second base slugger kind of guy if he can come back from the torn ACL. Well, you know, some interesting prospects here, right? But I feel like a lot of this is you're banking on old guys figuring, like getting back to their early career numbers. Jeff McNeil's almost 33. He's a couple years removed from being from winning a batting title, right? He's looked like a different dude since then. Jesse Winker is 32. Charlie Marte's 36. I'm amazed they haven't traded him yet. Nimmo's 32. And again, some of these guys still aren't healthy, and the season starts in like 2.5 weeks, right? Nimmo's still not healthy. McNeil's still not healthy. Alvarez is out for a month. Like, I don't understand why they're so well-regarded. And then the rotation, you've got injuries. Sean Manaea strained oblique. Frankie Montas strained lat. Both of them were injured in February. They're both going to miss some time. Manaea should come back first, Montas second. And so right now you've got Kodai Senga, David Peterson, Clay Holmes, who I am incredibly high on. I've watched so much of his stuff. He looks so awesome. I got him in a dynasty league on Monday night. I got him actually. I waited to nominate him until the very end of the auction. I got him for $5. Wow, and I'm going to give him the longest contract I can possibly give him in that league. I think it's 4 years. Because I'm like, at $5, even if he doesn't work as a starter, he's a great reliever.
Yeah.
But outside of that, Tyler McGill and Griffin Koenig are in the rotation right now because of the injuries. I don't hate the rotation. Like, the guys in the rotation, it's just everybody has workload concerns. It's like the Dodgers, where everybody has workload concerns, but I feel like the equivalent rotation on the Dodgers, everybody's better than the rotation here. This is the diet Dodgers rotation.
Yeah, 100%. Even when you get Sean Manaea and Frankie Montas back, then neither of those guys are legitimate aces, and they're going to have workload concerns. And Sean Manaea had a career year last year. And again, if you look at his Baseball Savant page, there's a lot of blue, so don't expect that again. He throws out of the zone way too much, and the Phillies just decided they were not going to sit there and sit back and watch pitches go by. They were going to swing at everything. So
ball go good boom, on baby. Sean Manaea. Good or bad, ball go boom.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think you're a little bit higher on the rotation than I am. Kodai Senga can be great, but again, he's got workload concerns. He's not going to come
anywhere near. 5 1/3 in the regular season.
Yeah, he's not going to come anywhere near the ERA title in 2025.
Yeah.
Qualifying for it.
Sorry. I was about to say, the projections on FanGraphs were 160, and I'm like, that's a terrible idea.
No workload.
The bullpen here, Edwin Diaz, still a good closer. I like some of the depth options here. Jose Butto, Reed Garrett, Ryan Stanek, Danny Young. They're fine. Right. But like, it's Edwin Diaz and the boys. I mean, nobody here. I'm not scared of any of these guys outside of Edwin Diaz. And even then, I'm not scared. I'm just kind of annoyed because I hear that song way too much. Like, it just, this really feels like one injury, especially if it's Diaz, they're in trouble. Because like, who do you, a bunch of these guys picked up a couple saves last year, but like, who do you trust to step in as your closer if there's an injury to Diaz? Nope. Like, AJ Minter is on his way back. Right. He'll be back, you hope, by opening day. He has closing experience in Atlanta. He was a little shaky in that role. I mean, adding him will do wonders for this bullpen. But like, even then, one injury and I think they're in trouble. And like, this is the third best bullpen in the division. And they're out of the three contenders. And that's why I have them third on Wednesday.
Yeah, no, 100%. I agree with you. This is it's the only thing I will say about the bullpen is Carlos Mendoza is probably the best manager in the National League East, in my opinion, just because I'm very analytically minded, and he's very analytically minded. So I agree with a lot of the moves that he makes, and he uses that bullpen well. So I think that he can make that weak bullpen work, but it is on paper, you know, the third best bullpen in the division, and to follow up on yesterday's comment about the lineup that the Nationals is better than, it's the Mets. I think the Nationals have a better lineup than the Mets. So go ahead and throw the hate down in the comments.
I was about to say, that's gonna be controversial. You should clip this and make short out of that.
Oh, yeah.
That'll be total controversial. I'll give you the clip of the I'm a hater thing. You can play that in the short, too. Let us know what you think. Do you think the Mets are going to finish in third? You think they're going to be better or worse? If you're a Mets fan, get mad at him, not me. But I'm on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's on Twitter at Troy B Baseball. Leave a comment down below. You're listening on audio. Leave us a 5-star review. And either way, send your friends firstpitchpodcast.com for every episode of the pod. Until next time, this has been First Pitch.